Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm your host, Misha Globerman. Trampoline Hall is a lecture series that takes place in a bar, usually in Toronto, sometimes in other cities. People give lectures on all kinds of subjects, with the one restriction being that they cannot be professionally expert on the topics on which they speak. It cannot be their job to know the thing. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. You right now are not in a bar. You're listening to your headphones or whatever. Maybe you're in a bar. But this is the Trampoline Hall Podcast. In each episode, we reach back into the archives, our recordings, and we choose one lecture to bring to you through the magic of podcasting. The schedule for the podcast is this. What we do is we do a short season of around six individual episodes, each with one lecture. Then we take a lengthy break because we get tired. If you're listening now, you are hearing the very start of the latest season. In this season, all the lectures are chosen by John McCurley. John McCurley went through the archives and chose six lectures for your enjoyment. By the way, if you like this podcast and you're in Toronto, you should come see the show. We have an email list you can join up and you can find out when the show is. But for now, let's get on to this podcast episode's lecture. Oh, I should tell you now, you may be wondering if it contains mature language. Well, wonder no more, it does. The topic is wrestling and the lecturer is Josh Vetivelu.
Have been telling me, Josh, just make the talk really, really funny. That's all you have to do. You know, and honestly, it's the most stressful thing to hear is to tell someone to just, all you have to do is be like absolutely hilarious. because I was definitely afraid that I would find myself in a situation where I would try too hard and then I would like look down at my sheet and then I would see pause for laughter and no one would be laughing. I have pause for laughter right now. There's smoke jokes. It's great. Anyway, so my talk is about wrestling, specifically WWE's WrestleMania. And in my really in-depth research slash attempts to make this talk funny, I found myself trapped in a Google spiral looking up things like funniest moments in WrestleMania. And after wading through about, 20 videos of like men scantily clad, just like doing like the suck it gesture, and then like spitting beer in the faces of female wrestlers, I fell into some unexpected territory. One of the things that I found out was that Hulk Hogan's son, whose name is Nick, is circumcised. He's about six and a half inches, good girth, keeps the pubes really nice and trim, and he was one of the first men affected by the iCloud nudes scandal hack thing. So I've seen his penis, and now you have that knowledge as well. And so following that rabbit hole, I also found out that Hulk Hogan recently had a sex tape released. And honestly, as much as I didn't think I wanted to see any of the Hogan's genitals, it left me with like a really weird boner, you know? And and I honestly didn't know what to do with this boner. And I guess like having a confusing boner is the best segue I could think of to go into the actual content of this talk. So I guess the original starting point for this talk was a very specific childhood memory that I had. But first, a bit of a backstory. I was a really weird kid. And my weirdness was really emphasized by the fact that at the point of my life where this story takes place, we had just moved from a small two-bedroom apartment in Jane and Finch to a four-bedroom, three-story house in Thornhill. Now I'm gonna rely on everyone's assumptions about those two socioeconomic spaces to it was a big culture shock for me. Because like in Jane and Finch, I was one of many people of color. My extended family lived there, you know. In our apartment building, it was normal to smell like the smell of curry of various different nationalities. And there's really like nothing exceptional about our family to the area. Cut scene to Thornhill. I am one of two non-white students, and that was pretty terrible. And to illustrate how terrible how terrible being one of two of anything actually is, one time my teacher was lecturing our class about how terrible Jane and Finch was. He was just like, oh man, it's like really bad there, like it's really, really violent, like definitely don't go ever. And like, I like, you know, raised my hand. I was just like, oh, like some content I can pitch into. And I was just like, actually, like I lived there. It's not so bad. I think, you know, a lot of it is hype and, you know, and to which the rest of the class turned to viciously laugh at me and call me poor, because apparently poverty is hilarious to rich middle-class white kids. But more upsetting than that was the fact that my teacher then came back with, probably where Josh lived wasn't too bad, but the reality is that Jane and Finch is really, really violent and you shouldn't go there. And like, understandably, having my own experience re-scripted and fed back to me is a very frustrating thing, but it was also very confusing. Like, I still, to this day, question the intent of my teacher of, like, why? And so it was little things like that from the transition to Jane and Finch to Thornhill that started to create a distance within me. And so things that previously were held really tightly together as, like, an individual subject were now starting to be, like, pulled apart. So there were these things that made me like a visibly weird kid in Thornhill. But then in general, I was just like a really sensitive, anxious, scared, introverted kid. You know, I had a peach fuzz mustache before like anyone else did. I couldn't run 10 feet without falling flat on my face. I had the uncanny ability to attract balls to my face anytime anyone, anywhere kicked a ball. I mean, also different later, but. And so, as is very common with unathletic, loner, faggy children like myself, things that offered a kind of escapism were very, very seductive to me. I read a lot of fantasy novels, you know, the kinds where the protagonist, the sad protagonist, finds out through some twist of fate that they are actually exceptional in every other world but the ones in which they grew up in. And I really, really did believe in the things that these escapist fantasies offered me. And once we moved to Thornhill, we had a television, and television offered me something very similar. So television had this capacity to offer me something more real and tangible to these books. Because when something was filmed, it offered a sense of truth to it, you know? Like, these were real bodies in real space, and, like, it was being transmitted through the TV, like, straight to my brain as, like, truths about the world. So, for this memory, I'm about 8 or 9 years old, skinny, unathletic, understanding that I'm probably a homo, but also probably a misandrist, and I really, really, really love TV. Now, we had pretty strict parents growing up, so we weren't allowed to watch things like The Simpsons or really like anything that aired past like 9 p.m. So wrestling was this thing that I heard about from all the macho boys on the playground, and they would like imitate it, and it would be like really terrifying to me. But then at the same time, I was like filled with like longing that I wasn't able to like participate in that space. And so the curiosity was there, and the prohibition by my parents made it all the more like taboo and seductive for me. So one night I decided to sneak down to our basement. To keep stealth, I kept all the lights off, which meant that every feeling was heightened. Also, the basement was unfinished, so it was like really, really creepy. I don't know if any of you had the thing where like once you were done in the basement, you had to like book it up the fucking stairs because like Satan was at the bottom, and if you took your time, like it's done, right? So, anyway, so the basement was filled with like haphazardly stocked cardboard boxes, raw concrete floors, itchy exposed insulation, and so many dead and alive bugs. So in the middle of this maze of boxes and bugs and concrete, sat this really old tube TV. And I remember reaching out and pressing the power button on this TV and flinching at the big like thunk noise that it made. And it was a really old TV, so it took about 5 minutes for it to show anything other than like a black screen with the TV's channel number. But it did play the audio immediately. So there I was, feeling itchy, scared, and nervous in a pitch black basement. And all of a sudden, the space was filled with this ghostly groaning of a giant, angry crowd. And eventually, the screen flickered on, and there was this pan shot of all the WrestleMania fans. They were mostly white, they were mostly men, and they seemed really, really angry and like rough. They were waving signs and fists and middle fingers, and they were like screaming at the top of their lungs. And it was like pretty fucking terrifying. I was like physically nauseous and trembling, and I was like, oh fuck, oh, okay, this is why I'm not ready, you know, like, like these people probably wanna kill me. And this is something that I very distinctly remember thinking, that should I be there in the space of the audience, these people would probably immediately identify that I didn't belong, they would hate me, and they would happily tear me from limb to limb. This is the fantasy books coming in, it's just. So then the camera focused from the pan shot of the audience to the two wrestlers, and the wrestlers were like jumping up on the ropes and they were doing their flexing thing and like yelling at the crowd, and then they got like really close up to each other and they did the shit talking thing, and then I was just like kiss, 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 kiss. And honestly, I was still feeling like really weird and nauseous and scared, but I was starting to get like a handle on the emotions because it all seemed like really, really gay, you know? And I remember being confused that the wrestlers were like all oiled down and like hairless. Cause like, I was just like, this doesn't seem like, you know, like quote unquote manly body stuff, whatever. This seemed like Sports Illustrated models or whatever. And so there's a bit of like a confusion. They were wearing skimpy underwear and their muscles seemed to like bulge out almost to the point of bursting. And it was a little bit arousing, but it was also a little bit distancing because it was this strange kind of like drag performance of white masculinity where the audience really, really needed these manicured bodies to push up against each other really hard and fast and repeatedly and a lot. And it made me think of this art piece by this artist named Barbara Cougar, and it's a text-based piece where she says, "You construct intricate rituals to touch the skin of other men." And it's almost as if these wrestlers were upheld as an unattainable plastic model of what every man in the audience wanted to be. These wrestlers were the living dolls for the audience, able to act out this kind of masculinist soap opera that allowed them to externalize intense feelings and emotions that were antithetical to proper male socialization. And so what I guess I'm interested in is how did I know that the people in the audience wanted to kill me? And how did I know that every man in the audience was probably really frustrated with having to be a man? And so I started reading this book called Steel Chair to the Head, The Pleasure and Pain of Professional Wrestling. And for a hilarious title, it actually has some really great in-depth analysis about how the WWE was packaged as reactionary to anxieties about class mobility, national masculinity, and the growing threat of a PC culture. So firstly, we have this idea of citizenship and civility, where the men of the middle class became frustrated with the fact that the proper civilized subject, to be a proper civilized subject, you had to adhere to certain rules of propriety. And so in the minds of these men, their participation in the middle class or civil society had a feminizing aspect to it. Proper social conduct served to rein in the unbridled, raw masculinity and purity of the working class. And this was something imagined, obviously. And so embedded in this was a certain dangerous kind of nostalgia for a time and place where white men didn't have to bite their tongue. So the WWE and other masculinist program of the era served as a way to act out at the frustration that these men felt. Being a white man was supposed to feel good. Being a man is supposed to be the best. But being a poor white man is actually too much work with not a lot of payout. And so the response to feeling like you're not being given what you're due is to look to those who were previously below you and blame them for taking a piece of your pie. And so as the old saying goes, when you're accustomed to privilege, equality feels like oppression. And it's a phenomenon that we see popping up in multiple spaces. Like when we see people who show up at Black Lives Matter protests and scream, "All lives matter," what is that? Or Donald Trump's entire platform of blaming immigrants for the poverty of the white working class. I think there's a psychology about this where these people are looking at their surroundings and they're feeling unsatisfied. You know, they're experiencing for the very first time the crumblings of the North American dream, and they're scared. They are afraid that maybe the power structures that they were so invested in maintaining were never actually meant to protect or benefit them. And it's this fear that prevents them from being able to empathize with the fact that Black, Indigenous, and immigrant communities have been standing on this perilous footing since the conception of North America. So essentially, I think I was correct in the fact that these people really did hate my queer brown ass. Or rather, they saw my body as a subject position, as a threat to their privileges. And I think their hate or fear or whatever it was definitely misplaced onto my body because of an inability to admit that it was exhausting and impossible to uphold the expectations of white masculinity as they wanted to. They could never fully be the smooth, manicured bodies slamming into each other endlessly. And so to conclude, I want to bring us back to the Hulk Hogan sex tape. Now, full disclosure, I've had some friends who said they will find it for me, but I couldn't find the actual tape. But there are a lot of screen caps that are subtitled that have gone viral. And so I'm going to force some meaning out of two of these screen caps, and I know that I'm doing that. So in one clip, Hulk Hogan pulls off his shirt, and his companion is on the bed, and then he says, "I started working out again." And then he runs his hands through his blonde hair and poses like he does in the ring. In the second screen cap, Hulk has found his tank top, but not his pants, and sits almost deflated on the edge of the bed and says, "Man, I'm out of breath." And honestly, I know this seems like I'm trying to make fun of him, but I think it's a really beautiful juxtaposition of images. It's this private sexual moment that encompasses both the need for Hulk to perform the masculine doll he was groomed to be, and then also this moment where the posturing deflates, and he makes an admission as to how exhausting upholding that masculinity is. And I think allowing the bulging male flesh of the masculine ideal to be punctured, wounded, and deflated is actually a radical act of vulnerability that is integral to curtailing the violent expectations of being a man. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Josh Dedivelu.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, we'll Q&A.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are there any questions? Yes, you, sir.
So Europe's not short of small-minded white people, but they don't seem to have a wrestling industry.
So why doesn't Europe have wrestling despite having small-minded white people? Is the question.
Well, I guess I don't think that wrestling is like a byproduct of having small-minded white people. I don't know that that's necessarily what I wanted to get across, but I think, you know, it's symptomatic of reactionary behavior and reactionary program that comes out through understanding. So like in this book that I was reading, they were saying that this masculinist program in American TV, like the Beer Show and WWE and all these kinds of things, emerged because too much of television was catering to the female consumer in the household, right? And so because of that, that was too girly for everyone, and they need to like reaffirm their masculinity in that space.
Right? Okay, so it's not like in terms of not happening in Europe, it's not. I don't know if that's interesting. It doesn't. I'm not sure if it addresses.
Yeah, I don't really know.
Okay. He doesn't know. Does that answer your question? Yes, there's a question up there, yeah.
Since you felt ostracized from the WWE, and that's supposed to be like the ideal man, right? Since you felt like you didn't belong there, did you have an idea of what the ideal man was supposed to be?
Did you have like a distinct idea of the ideal man that you felt less ostracized from? Is that sort of what you're...
Here's the thing I don't know that I want to get into, but I don't necessarily think that of myself as a man, right? So like when we see an ideal man, great. I don't really want to fuck with that. Is that fine?
Yeah, I guess. So you're not concerning yourself. Like it's like that's not something that you have.
Yeah,
you're not like trying to.
Yeah.
Okay. You're not trying to be or find.
Yeah.
An idea or define.
I think like the idea of positing anything as an ideal, and especially as an ideal man, is like really tied in with certain power structures of oppression, right? So I feel like, you know, like what does it mean to like covet that or like want to be that?
Right.
It's just, yeah.
Right. So no is the answer to your question. Okay. Yes, all the way back there, yes.
Did watching wrestling change how you interacted with the other kids at school or how you engaged with them in the playground?
Did watching wrestling affect how you engaged with the other kids at school in the playground? I'll put in that detail for something.
Yeah, it was like literally this like one time. And I was just like, no. It's okay.
So it wasn't like you then became this wrestling fan
No.
and you were like talking wrestling with all the other kids.
No,
and
I like loathed them more maybe because I was just like, okay, I saw you're all a little bit dumber in my eyes. I'm going to back away slowly.
So it just kind of like confirmed the existing relationship
kind of for you?
Like
definitely.
You're like, this is pretty much what I thought you guys were doing.
Yeah.
This is what I thought was inside your heads.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. Okay, good. All right, yes, over there, yes.
So do you feel that wrestling is actually building to a point where it's going to explode the facade of masculinity that's been propagated in the last like 60 years.
So the question is wrestling building to the point where it's going to explode the what of masculinity? The facade of masculinity that's been building for the last 60 years.
The myth.
The like right.
No.
So the question length to answer ratio is always an interesting stat for those of you keeping score.
Well, I don't know if I should be giving shorter answers.
No, that's a good, okay. No, it's okay. No, I mean, was there anything in there that's like, no, you can do it. No, that's a good, that's a fair answer.
No,
it's really up to you.
It's just like, you know, Hulk Hogan, as he exists in the ring, is an image, right? He's not a real man. So getting to see, which, like, through this very invasive process of having a sex tape leak, punctures the myth of that image, right? And so we get to see that even Hulk Hogan, the image of this whatever wrestling, someone who participates in this sphere, can't keep it up all the time. But didn't mean it like that. I didn't want to do that.
Is it like a recent tape? This tape, like, when
apparently
is it
from? I think it like came out in like 2013. So it's like pretty old. But he's in the process of suing now.
He got a huge settlement.
Yes, yeah.
$150 million.
Yes.
People for emotional damages, which I kind of love.
For
right?
What?
Emotional damages.
Good. Does that mean he has 100? What?
She's seen it.
You've seen it?
Come up.
What? We don't even want you to talk. He just wants you to come stand.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about it? What?
I saw it because my brother told me about it.
Okay, so first of all, she's explaining why she saw it. She didn't go looking for it. Her brother told her about it. So now we excuse you for having watched it because it's obviously her brother's fault. And now tell us, what was it like? Yeah, sex with his best friend's wife.
No, it was like a cuckolding thing. Like, it was all consensual. Like,
all consensual?
He was in the office beside, like, the husband was in the office beside.
The husband was in the office. Yeah, they, like, said, okay, so it was like, all right.
And I think that you
still have a lot of expertise.
Yeah, so he goes and sleeps with his friend's wife.
Sleeps with his friend's
And then the tape is showing Hulk Hogan kind of not being a, kind of being a sort of
So it's Hulk Hogan being cuckolded. But it's his friend's. He's sleeping with his friend's wife, but he's being. I guess the whole cuckold sex video scene is more complicated than I thought it was.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So he's kind of, and then he wants to eat sushi.
Aww. That's nice.
Is that the one detail that you didn't have?
That's,
you
know, it really wasn't.
Like,
yeah,
the fuck was stuff,
I got,
I know, it's
everything else.
Oh, it's sushi.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, good to replenish your carbs. Probably healthy. I don't know.
Yeah, but wait, okay, we'll get to your question. But I forgot what the question even was. There was a question that led up to that. Wasn't there, or no? Do you know?
I don't know.
We don't know
happening.
All right, what's
I'm
your
sorry.
Question? Yes.
What if you had any? You don't have to have it. If you had any thoughts/feelings on people of color in the audiences of these, you know, of WWE or at Trump rallies, not plants. What are your thoughts on that psychology in relation to masculinity?
What are your thoughts on people of color who go to WWE?
Yeah.
Who go to wrestling?
Who
events?
Aren't you and aren't
who aren't you?
Who aren't being torn apart and who are there?
And are not being torn apart if there are such people.
Yeah.
So that's like a weird thing to talk about to a room full of mostly white people. I'm just going to say that. But I think there's like a lot of like internalized and survival instincts that like go into there, right? Like when we were growing up, when I was talking about citizenship and like these white men using wrestling and these masculinist programming to act out, there's only a specific kind of body that's allowed to act out, right? So in so like my father was never allowed to act out. If anything, it became very important for us as immigrants to perform civilianship as properly as we can. And I think there's this weird psychological thing that happens where you get enfolded into these rhetorics of like us versus them, and you try to assimilate yourself to kind of protect yourself, which is like a really, it's messed up in a lot of ways, but it's also something that I have like empathy for because I can understand it. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, anything else, other questions? Anything else you want to know? Yes, over there, yes.
Your teacher who made the really
Yeah, the teacher who said that crazy thing about Jane and Finch, were they a good
no.
teacher in general? No, they were.
No.
All right.
No.
What made you, why did you ask that question?
I'm curious if you had like a whole year of ignorance.
Was it a whole year of ignorance or just like a flickering of ignorance?
Well, like he was a very charming teacher in that he had all the students in his pocket. So it was one of those things where it was very isolating when you have a room full of people who are laughing at you for like just the reality of your life. And then, you know, like the one person who should be like reining it in is just all like, okay, yeah, that is hilarious, but you're also wrong, you know, and so, yeah.
All right, so no, not a good teacher in general, but all, but there you go. Yes, there's a hand over there, yeah.
I do think you had some thoughts on performative masculinity stuff in terms of like other things that have emerged, like ultimate fighting and stuff.
Wait, you're like, I'd like to hear about masculinity in a different field, like ultimate fighting. Like that was as far as the, you're like, is that, so yeah, like if that's all, can you think of any similarities between? I can't even think of similarities between ultimate fighting and wrestling. Can you? I actually don't even know the difference. I'll like, what made you? No, well, okay. Do you have a response? Because I'm curious about the question. But do you have an awareness of like ultimate? Like, does that feel different to you in a?
I think one of the things that I can say is that through sports, one of the things I read in the book is that the body is always asserted as a site of experience through pain. So when we like witness other men fighting each other, we're kind of reasserting that the experience that we're kind of projecting onto those bodies is real. And I don't know if that makes sense.
I'm not sure. Like, what do you mean? Don't talk.
Like, I don't really want to get into it because I like skimmed over it in the
we're
book.
We're here.
I should have just said no.
But what is it? That experiencing their pain, that seeing the pain played out.
Well, it's this kind of this idea that like pain makes the body real. Like,
right.
And so when we see two people that we that don't exist as like real bodies, but they exist as like imaginings of what like ideal bodies should
right.
be clashing together, it makes the imaginings of those two bodies real because
right.
they're bleeding in front of us.
Right, right. And so in ultimate fighting, I guess, it's more real than wrestling, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that, someone says no, someone says yes. Opinions are divided.
There's a lot more blood.
There's more blood? So who's, people are like, eh, it looks the same. All right, okay. I don't know. But there's more actual blood. But is that like a difference? What made you ask about that as opposed to wrestling? What made you think like, oh, that's a different thing?
I guess just because if wrestling evolved at the time out of like this dominant culture and feeling things, which you can see that if ultimate wrestling, which is like supposed to be like more intense and more real than that, then like what did that evolve out of?
Right, so it like came out of a different time, like it's more recent, it's supposed to be more intense and more real, and whether that like does something different or anything.
I guess, but like, I think I was mostly using wrestling as like a case study for this kind of thing that happens constantly, right? And so,
yeah. Right. Okay. All right. Cool. Anything else you want to know? I'm curious about when you started off and you talked about like the I don't remember what the adjective before boner was, but like
confusing.
There was confusing.
Confusing.
Thank you. So I guess I'm interested to hear more about like what's.
The first confusing boner as
yeah.
opposed to the second one. I guess it was just like, I was just all like, oh, here's Nick Hogan's penis. Oh, here's Hulk Hogan's sex tape. Oh, a boner. I just didn't, like, I
what
don't
the,
find
like,
any of them attractive at
right.
all.
Right. So, okay, so go on.
So maybe it was just like a weird, like, voyeuristic thing, which, like, now all of you know about me, so that's great.
So what was confusing was you're like, oh, those guys are not attractive guys to me.
Yeah, and I think it was just like this thing where I was like trying to do some like weird analytic research, and then I was like suddenly caught up in like weird realms of desire or like attraction, which I didn't anticipate at all.
It's such a funny thing because I think so many of us said it, like, oh, I'm going to go do some research on the internet, and then 5 minutes later, you're looking at porn
yeah,
and
around. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But, like, in your case, it was fair.
Yeah.
Like, it was fair. You weren't procrastinating, you were doing the work.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Is it like, I don't know why I want to know more about this,
yeah.
but are you like,
great.
Well, you know, that's what happens when you lead with the confusing boner.
Yeah, I guess so.
Are you like sad? Are you sad to be aroused by this? Or are you just like, sorry?
Yes, always sad. Every erection. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's true. I guess I was mostly just trying to be like, drawing a parallel between like being aroused as a child looking at the wrestling thing and then also like fearing for my life. Not that I was fearing for my life looking at like Nick Hogan's penis, but like, I don't know.
But then now you're like, oh, like this stuff, which is all doesn't feel like it's for me and doesn't isn't even what I think I find interesting.
Yeah.
But do you think that there's like a to anything to be learned from that for yourself? Like, or do you think it was just like, oh, just random? Or do you think it's like, oh, like my body, there's something that like I'm drawn to.
Yeah.
There's something that's actually.
I think like I'll never talk about my erections in public ever again. Like, if that's fair.
That's not the lesson I was hoping for.
It's what I got.
All right, well, let's all end on that useful moral. Ladies and gentlemen, Josh Vettivalu.
Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Angela Shackle and Braden Labonte. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook. If you enjoyed the podcast, it really helps us out if you leave a review on iTunes. Please go ahead and do that. It helps a lot. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.